Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Don't Drive Like My Pontiff division here at Car Talk Plaza.
This week, and this is absolutely true, the Pope came out with his Ten Commandments for motorists. I thought he mostly gets driven around in his Pope-mobile, but apparently he knows quite a bit about driving. Mm. So here are the Pope's Ten Commandments for motorists. And these are real.
Okay.
One, you shall not kill.
I think he must have borrowed that from the
other
ones.
That's good.
That's okay.
It's a good way to start. Two, the road shall be for you a means of communion between people and not of mortal harm.
Seems a little redundant, but that's okay.
Three, courtesy, uprightness, and prudence will help you deal with unforeseen events.
Okay.
Four, be charitable and help your neighbor in need, especially victims of accidents.
Okay.
Five, cars shall not be for you an expression of power and domination and an occasion of sin. I don't get that one. Six, charitably convince the young and not so young not to drive when they are not in a fitting condition to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Seven, support the families of accident victims. Eight, bring guilty motorists and their victims together at the appropriate time so that they can undergo the liberating experience of forgiveness. Nine, on the road, protect the more vulnerable party. And 10, feel responsible toward others.
Hmm.
Wow.
That's pretty good. Well, you know, since we were both raised as Catholics, we happen to know, of course, that the Pope is infallible.
Oh, yeah.
Nonetheless, we did think of a few commandments he may have left out.
Yeah, but we're just respectfully suggesting these. He can take them or leave them, but here are a few we might have included.
Should I start?
Go ahead. Do it all.
Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's Lexus. Thou shalt never combine convertibles and comb-overs. Thou shalt not take thy rental car to Mexico.
I like that one. Good. It's good.
Thy horsepower shalt not exceed thy IQ. We're in trouble, are we?
I'm done for. And my horsepower is 52.
If thou are going to pick thine nose, for God's sake, make sure no one's looking. Thou shalt not lie, cheat, steal, or attempt to sell undercoating. That's for our brethren in the automotive sales divisions.
Yeah.
Pay attention to this one. Thou shalt not return thy brother's car on empty.
Yeah. That's for me or for you?
Thou shalt handle lit cigars with care, lest they find refuge near your loins. You've had that happen, right?
I certainly have.
Thou shalt not combine dialing and driving, lest thou mortal coil be wrapped around an unholy bridge abutment.
I like that one.
Blessed are the prii, for they shall inherit...
What's prii mean?
It's the plural of prius. Blessed are the prii, for they shall inherit the earth. Just a couple of more. Thou shalt keepeth thy 17-year-old son bound to the slowest and ugliest 1979 Volvo, which hath presenteth itself on the list of Craig. And, of course, last but certainly not least, thou shalt not drive like my brother.
And one more, thou shalt not drive like my brother.
Well, I'm sure some of our listeners would like to suggest additional commandments.
Oh, I'm sure they would.
So you can read ours and, of course, add your own at our website, cartalk.com. In the meantime, we'll take your car questions at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Calling from San Francisco.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
Kate?
I'm good, yeah.
And do you abide by all these commandments that we've just revealed to you?
Yeah, I live in the land of the prii out here.
Oh, of course.
Oh, that's right.
So what's going on, Kate?
Well, I drive a 1996 Jeep Cherokee, and I'm having a problem with my steering wheel. In order to drive in a straight line, the wheel actually has to be at a 90-degree angle from its normal position.
Oh, so it's rotated 90 degrees.
To the right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But the alignment is fine. If I let go, it'll drive straight and the wheel just stays in that position.
Well, when was the work done on this thing?
I bought it used about 6 months ago. I didn't notice it then. It's been getting a little bit worse.
Well, oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be getting any worse, but somebody has taken the steering wheel off.
Oh, man.
And didn't put it back on straight.
Well, maybe. Or you could have lent it to somebody. did somebody drive this thing besides you? Did you lend it to a brother, for example, who returneth to you the tank on empty?
No, I don't think so. I've taken it on a few camping trips, sort of off-road a little bit, but...
I mean, was it a gradual thing, or did you happen to notice one day?
Well, I kind of noticed one day, but at that point it was only at 45 degrees, and now it's even more extreme.
Really? This is very unusual.
That is very unusual.
And worrisome, I might add.
I know. I've started to worry about it.
Tommy suggested, usually when we have a customer complain that the steering wheel is crooked, it's because we've replaced the front-end component, usually a tie rod or something like that. And as such, we have disturbed the alignment. And we maybe have gotten it close enough so that the driver can't tell it. And if you're driving a Jeep, you can't tell if it's out of alignment or not, with all due respect.
I mean, really? Okay.
Jeeps are all over the place.
Oh.
Yeah,
you know.
But if it's moving, then something is not good.
Is this a Grand Cherokee or is this a... regular old Cherokee.
It's a regular.
Regular old Cherokee.
Yeah.
Well, this has a steering box, and it has tie rods. It has on the right side, it has an inner and outer tie rod and a sleeve connecting them. And
okay.
It could be that sleeve, which is like a turnbuckle, is loose.
And that's very dangerous.
Well, it could be very dangerous if it came unscrewed completely. But what's happening is as that thing turns, it's changing the alignment.
And it's not supposed to be turning.
Right. And it's making the wheels either toe out or toe in, and that's what's causing the wheel to turn like this in order to make the vehicle continue to go straight.
Take it to your mechanic
as soon as you hang up the phone.
And when you do it, drive very slowly.
Okay.
I mean, if you really think that it's been getting progressively worse, then something is definitely loose, and it could be something just like what I described.
Okay.
So no matter what it is, you should get it someplace right away because
it could
be signaling that something is ready to fall off. It could also be that the nut behind the steering wheel is loose. I don't mean you. There's actually a nut that holds the steering wheel on, and it could be that that's loose, but that's unlikely.
Yeah.
I've been driving all over the place. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, don't do it
anymore. This is dangerous.
Okay. Wow. Thanks for the advice.
Thanks for the warning.
We can't afford to lose any listeners.
Especially young ones. I mean, the old ones, you know, those, they drop like
they're
flies.
They're going to go anyway.
See you, Kate. Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jonathan from Baton Rouge.
Hi, Jonathan. Yeah. How are you?
Pretty good. I have a question for y'all.
Now, do people from your town say Baton Rouge or do they say Baton Rouge?
Most of the people I know just say Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge. Okay. Well, you were born and bred there?
Actually, I was born in Lafayette.
All right. That's close enough. Anyway, Jonathan, what's happening?
Well, I have a 1996 Nissan Maxima,
mm-hmm.
and just the other day I was checking my power steering fluid level, mm-hmm. and it was full. But it looked like it hadn't been changed in about, 11 years or so.
Yeah, no one ever changes that stuff.
So I was wondering what an effective way would be to change it. So I went up on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and I read that if you take your mom's turkey baster...
you can suck it up out of there, right?
Exactly. And I was wondering if that's a safe way to recycle the fluid, and if it is, does that also work with brake fluid?
Yeah. I mean, I just wouldn't do this before Thanksgiving. I'd wait till a couple of days after. And then the thing has a whole year, so to speak, to kind of dry out. But it's perfectly okay to suck it out like that. But there are other ways. So we actually have a little machine in our shop that will do both things. No, we have one machine for each thing. We'll have one that actually will pump the brake fluid out. You open the bleeders. It's called a power bleeder. And you fill this thing up with fluid. And I don't forget who makes it, Snap-on makes it or something, and you put fluid in it, and then you go around, you open the bleeders, and you just see when the fluid comes out nice and clean, you're done.
Okay.
It's easier than it is with the power steering.
Yeah, the power steering, you've got to take off the hoses and hook it up to this machine, but it's also very simple. But if you want to really flush the thing out, sucking that few ounces of PS fluid out of the reservoir doesn't really do much.
Yeah, that's the problem with sucking it out, is you're only getting what's in the reservoir, and you're not getting all the stuff that's in all the lines.
Now, let me get this right, Jonathan. This power steering has never given you a bit of trouble.
No,
11 years.
So why are you making trouble?
Well, yeah, why are you looking for trouble? What do you need, a hobby?
Well, that's why I'm the black sheep of my family. I believe in the concept of preventative maintenance.
It wouldn't hurt to clean it.
It wouldn't hurt.
And an easier way to do it, if you have an assistant, is to loosen up the high-pressure hose, usually down at the rack.
Okay.
If you loosen that up and you put a bucket underneath it, a significantly sized bucket, and someone else started the engine and you had the cover off the reservoir and had at the ready a quart of PS fluid, you could add this stuff as it came out the bottom.
Okay.
Because the pump is going to turn as soon as the engine starts, and that's a better way to do it. And then when when you've used up all the fluid you have and the reservoir level has started to then drop, you can signal your assistant to shut it off, let the thing drain out by gravity the rest of the way, and then tighten that bolt at the rack and pinion.
And pour the rest of the stuff in.
And fill
that,
it up, no. and you're about as good. And then when the pump goes in a week, you'll say, I should never have done that. But no, that's a good thing to do. But that's an easy way to do it yourself.
All right.
Thanks for your call, Jonathan.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, good luck.
All right, see you later, man.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Who's this?
This is Robin New. I'm from Dothan, Alabama.
Dothan, D-O-T-H-A-N?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I've run across a Dothan some other place, too.
Oh, okay. I'd never heard of one before I moved here.
Oh, yeah. He was the Dothan at the museum.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry.
So what's up?
Nothing. I've got a 2001 Honda Civic that I bought from a dealership, and I'll just be driving, and whenever I go to exhale, like, say I'm in a median or passing another car, it just, like, pulls me backwards. And just as soon as, like, it just makes a room, room, like, it won't actually go forward. And then I let off the gas, and it's fine.
You're driving along.
Is this a stick shift or an automatic?
It's an automatic.
Automatic, okay.
So you're driving along on the highway.
Uh-huh.
And what lane are you in?
Usually the fast lane.
This is the fast lane. And you want to go faster.
Yeah.
So you're not happy that you're already going faster than everyone else. You want to go faster yet.
Okay. Yeah, so you step on the gas.
And it, like, you can feel it. It jerks you backwards.
Okay. So it doesn't take off. It sort of slows down almost.
Yeah. And as soon as you let off the gas, it's fine.
Right. You have what's called a classic high-speed miss. It isn't pulling you back so much as it's not propelling you forward. If the engine misses a beat, it would seem as if somebody had grabbed a hold of your rear bumper and
pulled back on it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you have a miss, an engine misfire.
Oh, no.
And it may not be terrible. You may need something as simple as a tune-up.
Okay.
You ever done that?
No, not since I had it. I had it for 6 months.
You might have something like a bad spark plug.
Okay.
That would be great.
Yeah, it certainly would.
Well, if this does it enough times, this high-speed missing, eventually it will turn on the check engine light.
That's actually on right now.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's good because it's going to make it easier for whoever you take it to figure it out.
Okay.
They'll hook up a scan tool
which will tell them things that are going on.
Okay.
And then, for a few $100... you'll get it fixed.
Yeah, why was that such a laugh?
We're hoping it's just that. I mean, we don't know, but I'm guessing it's something as insignificant as a bad spark plug.
Oh, okay.
All right, but get it looked at, because if the check engine light were to come on for some more serious reason, it doesn't like get brighter. In other words, if it's already on, you wouldn't know if there were a secondary problem that were occurring.
Exactly.
In the near future, cars are going to have the ability to communicate the fact that your check engine light is on to a satellite.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Big brother going to be looking down on you, Robin.
And the satellite is going to go tell the dealership what's wrong with it.
And they're going to come in the middle of the night.
And they're going to send a signal back to the satellite, which is going to fix the car.
Right. Right. Either that or suck the money out of your bank account. Or both. See you, Robin.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a good day.
All right. Look, I have to ask it. Did you forget last week's puzzler?
Absolutely.
Excellent. All's right with the world, then.
Remind me, what was it?
Well, it's about a problem that you never have.
Not enough alimony payments to make?
No, but close. No, having your car stolen.
Yeah, no matter how hard I try, it's still in the driveway every day.
Well, the puzzler is about a car theft, and we'll have the whole story and more of your car questions in just a minute, so please don't go anywhere.
He drives his SUV as if he's got the right to run over anything that might get in his way. I'd like to ride along, stick him in the slammer. We'll save a life with free and peace of mind, too. She drives her wagon and she's talking on the cell phone, straight through the stop sign into the soccer game.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from our new line of high-end fuzzy dice made from hand-stitched organic Shetland wool and featuring a free-range hemp hanging cord. From NPR, NPR member stations, and
LendingTree.com, where you can choose from up to four customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. LendingTree.com. And
Allstate, now offering accident forgiveness with a warning for people who eat greasy double cheeseburgers while driving.
Hey, I don't do that. I get the triple.
More information at allstate.com. Are you in good hands? And
K&N, providing an ecological alternative to disposable air filters designed to last the lifetime of each car. More information at knfilters.com.
And even though contractors everywhere aim their nail guns at their radios whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler.
Oh.
And this was sent in by a fellow named Daniel England. And as I mentioned last week, it was is historic, folkloric, and probably unrecognizable by Daniel after I obfuscated it. Anyway, Daniel writes, I'm the proud owner of a magnificent 1956 Chevrolet convertible, which
yes.
I restored to perfection over the last few years.
Wow.
Last week, on a very warm summer afternoon, I decided it was the perfect day for a ride, so I took the car into town. It needed gas, as the gauge was practically on empty, but I needed an ice cream, so I headed first to my favorite ice cream shop. I had a lot of trouble finding a parking space and had to park it down a side street. It was there I noticed a group of young guys standing around smoking cigarettes and eyeing my car rather covetously.
Sure.
I was a bit uneasy leaving it there, but, you know, people often take interest in such an old and well-preserved car, so I shrugged it off and went to enjoy my ice cream. Well, the line at the ice cream shop was long, and it took me quite a while to return to my car, and when I did return, my worst fears were realized. My car was gone, as were the young little brats I had spotted. I called the police and reported the theft and then went back and bought a quart of pistachio ice cream to drown my sorrows. About 10 minutes later, the police called me back to say they had found the car abandoned near a gas station a few miles out of town.
Yes, indeed.
I was relieved to learn that it was completely unharmed, and it seems that just before I called, the police had received a call from a young woman who was an employee at a self-service gas station. She told them that three young men had driven in with this beautiful old convertible. One of them came to the window and prepaid for $20 worth of gas.
Wow.
Then all three of them walked around the car several times. They opened the hood and stared at the engine compartment. Then they closed the hood and walked around the car in the other direction this time. Then they all got in the car and drove off without filling the tank. The police were at a loss to explain this unusual sequence of events, and the question is, why would anybody steal a car, pay for gas, not pump it, and then abandon the car and walk away.
And the answer is if they couldn't find where to put the gas.
Exactly.
Which you wouldn't, you'd never in a million years figure out where it was on this car.
No, you
and
wouldn't.
And it was on my 56 Chevy as well.
Right, it's behind the left taillight.
Behind the left taillight, exactly.
Yeah, there was a little lever you had to turn, and the taillight plunked down.
And right there was the cover to the gas tank.
And other GM cars, some older Cadillacs, I think in the earlier 50s.
I didn't have any of them.
No. But they also had it. And there was so this seemed to be like a hallmark of GM cars that they hid the gas filler. And so they did it on several models, and some actually had it behind the license plate.
That's right.
But if you didn't know where this thing was,
never,
you wouldn't find it. And that's why
it was really well designed.
It was the best design thing on the car. And that's why they walked around the car, threw up their hands, got in and drove away. When it ran out of gas, they left it there. So who's our winner?
Our winner this week is Lou Orchard from Bel Air, Kansas. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Lou is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which he can get our 2-CD set of disrespectful car songs. This set includes such classics as Push My Car, 20 Naked Pentecostals in a Pontiac, If She Wasn't on Blocks, and many, many more. Not a sentimental horsepower ballad among them. And the 2-CD set is yours, Lou, for being our Puzzler winner this week.
And if you weren't this week's Puzzler winner, you'll have another chance when the new Puzzler comes along in the third half of the show. In the meantime, if you have a car question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Josh, calling from San Francisco, California.
No kidding.
Josh, San Francisco, you want some kind of a cheap phone that you got in a cereal box?
Indeed.
You are? Okay.
Yeah, we can tell. But that's all right.
What kind of cereal was it?
Cheerios.
Cheerios, okay.
What's up, Josh?
Well, I drive a 1993 Ford Explorer with 216,648 miles on it.
Wow, you're right down to the penny here.
We're real cheap in my family, and we drive cars until they're in the grave.
Yeah, that's what I do, too.
No, actually, Tommy puts them in. They start out all right. He puts them in the grave. Anyway, go ahead, Josh.
So here's the deal. When the car is not been warmed up, in other words, I just turn it on and it's been left overnight.
Right, so the engine is cold.
Yes, everything's cold.
Everything's
started up.
Yeah.
If the car is pointing uphill, it won't go into drive.
Uh-huh.
Or if the car is going downhill, I can get it to drive. And then when I go up a hill, at the top of the hill, if I take my foot off the accelerator for just a second, the car drops out of gear and starts rolling backwards.
Yeah, it drops into neutral.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But if you're facing downhill, you don't have this problem.
None of this happens at all?
Correct. I can put it in drive, and I'll be able to get out of my parking spot. Or if it's flat, it's uphill, it won't go into gear.
Well, you know what? I want to spin the wheel of automotive misfortune because the answer is on there, right?
You think so, huh?
Well, I mean, I know the answer already. I'm pretty sure I do. I just want to see if we can get a corroborating spin.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. You ready, Josh?
You bet.
Can you hear the wheel?
Yeah, I hear it.
Of course.
This is a great...
Oh my God, wait a minute. You're not going to believe it. I missed it by one.
You almost had it.
It came up thermostat, but the very next one, and I'm sure it was because I just was a little exuberant with my spin, was a bad motor mount. Because the motor and the transmission are moving around, and that's why when you go up and downhill, you know, it gets affected. Because when you start going down the hill, the motor, which is not supposed to move with respect to the frame, is sliding forward. And when it does that, it pulls the transmission out of gear. So either you have a worn out or a broken motor mount or a transmission mount.
So why is it when it heats up, why does this cure the motor mount problem?
When it heats up.
I was afraid you were going to ask that question. Yeah.
Yeah, what? Well... Josh, we're losing you here, man. We got a bad connection.
No, we don't. We have a perfectly good connection.
In that case, it may not be the motor mount. It may, in fact, be the transmission is on the way out. You said you have 200, how many miles, 260,000?
216,000.
216,000.
Now, the car is red. I don't know if that makes a difference at all.
I think they're all
Everything
red.
Everything makes a difference.
But remember earlier you said that you'd drive them into the ground?
Yeah.
This is the ground.
This is it.
Have I hit rock bottom?
Yeah, I'm assuming you've checked the fluid level and all that. I mean, right?
I went to Jiffy Lube the other day and had it all, the fluids checked, and they said it all looks good.
Yeah. And I think I have to go back on my bad motor mount thing and suggest that the transmission is on the way out. And it's often the case that transmissions slip when they're cold and then begin, as the thing warms up, begin to grab a little bit better. And if you were to move to a cold climate, you wouldn't be able to leave your street.
Ah.
So the fact that you live in San Francisco means that it's probably going to get better and better as the warmer weather comes.
Okay.
You know, so you might be able to squeeze the summer out of it. You planning any trips this summer?
Not really long ones.
Well, if you do plan it, you go to the desert southwest. I think you'd be all right there.
Okay.
Take it to a transmission shop, and they're going to tell you what's exactly wrong. You may have to leave it with them overnight, but they'll figure it out. And I don't trust the guys at Jiffy Lube. They check the fluid level and all that, but they can't see what's going on with the pressures inside the transmission. A transmission shop will know, and they'll give you the bad news. Just make sure that you have a support group with you.
Okay.
Some close friends. See you, Josh.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Danielle Marks, and I'm from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, Danielle.
Louisville.
Yeah.
Home of the slugger.
Yes.
They still make bats? They must still make bats there, right?
Yes, of course. We have a big museum for it.
Just a museum or a factory?
It's a factory, but in the factory there's a museum.
Oh, I was just checking. I figured maybe they're making them in Shanghai now. Anyway,
what's up?
What's going on?
Okay, well, I have a 93 Toyota Corolla, and my brakes are doing some funny things. Whenever I'm on the expressway, usually on the expressway because I have to be going pretty fast, and if I get off or if I slow down really fast for traffic, my brake pedal, like, pulsates, and it shakes, and if I slow down too fast, my whole front of the car starts to shake.
Yeah. That's a very common problem.
Oh.
Yeah.
What is it?
Oh, what is it? Well...
It's the brakes.
Yes. Okay.
No, your brake rotors, the discs are warped.
Okay.
And they probably have to be replaced.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, you can take it into any shop, and they could just jack it up, and they'll figure it out.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be obvious. They'll put a dial indicator on the brake caliper, and they'll see as the high spot on the rotor comes around, they'll see that dial indicator jump, and that's what you're feeling. In the car, when you step on the brake, that high spot that's coming around and pushing back on the pads is sending pressure back right to your foot.
Right
to your foot, and you feel your foot.
Yes.
Yeah, and if it gets real bad, you can lose teeth over this.
I know.
When you brake, I would slacken the lower jaw.
Yeah.
You know, because if you keep the teeth away from one another, the chances of losing one are considerably diminished.
Good. So brakes and not the dentist.
Exactly. So keep that jaw loose. And get it in and get it looked at.
It's not a terribly serious thing, but it's got to be done.
Okay, so, I mean, I could wait.
Well, here's one caveat.
You're losing braking power. If you had to come to a really serious stop, you might not make it as fast as you could have.
Right, okay. Because the pads aren't maintaining full contact with the rotors. If, in fact, you had to make a panic stop and 20 feet made a difference... This
you
car
might, not
might,
made.
Might fail you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So don't tailgate any pig trucks.
Okay.
See you, Danielle. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Katie from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Katie. How are you?
Katie with a K.
I'm good. Katie with a K.
What's up?
Well, I have a noise in my car. I have a 2006 Honda Odyssey, and my 4-year-old... dropped an open box of Jelly Bellies in the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
I went home and I cleaned them out as best I could. I got my shop vac out and thought I sucked them all up, but apparently about 6 or 7 of them have become lost in my car. And every time I turn, they roll across the entire car on metal. And I hear this roll, you know, of about 6 Jelly Bellies.
So a Jelly Bellies like jelly beans? I don't have any 6-year-olds, so...
Yeah. They're like jelly beans. And where was he sitting exactly?
In the second seat.
Second seats.
Yeah.
And where did you find most of them?
Just on the floor around in the area. And then, you know, in the 2006 Odyssey, there's in the floorboard, there's that hatch thing where you can, like, store all your really
CDs. Ah.
So I pulled that carousel out, and I pulled the carpet out underneath the carousel, and I got my shop back in there, and they're not in there.
Well, are there heating ducts that come under the front seats to supply heat to the back? Because I think that's where the stuff maybe went. Or there are heating ducts. I mean, there is heat that comes in the back. Back in the old days of Vandom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people in the back froze. There was a temperature gradient of maybe about 80 degrees between the front seat and the way back.
It was 75 degrees at the driver's
and level. Minus 5.
And minus 5 in the way back.
but they took care of that by putting ductwork in the floor or in the headliner or someplace. But in your case, I'm assuming it's going to be in the floor someplace.
Okay.
And those jelly bellies got in there.
How can I get them out?
Oh, you're never going to get them out.
Well, you could get them out. I mean, if it were my car, I would get a floor jack, and I would jack up the front of the car as much as I could, and then I would start shaking things, and I'll bet you they would come rolling out. If that didn't work, it means I didn't have a high enough lift for the front, so I would take it to a shop, and I would get the front wheels on the lift and lift it up that way.
Uh-huh.
So I got it at a real steep angle, and then they'd all come pouring out.
Come pouring out into the car?
Into the car, and then they'll get lost somewhere else.
No, they'll just wind up sitting on the back door.
Oh, gotcha.
If you open the back door, they'll just roll right out onto the sidewalk.
Okay, so you don't think there's like a strong enough vacuum that I could stick if there are those vents in the floor that could suck them up? There's just not, that wouldn't work?
Maybe, you know, I mean,
maybe.
You have that crevice tool that goes with your vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
You might be able to adapt something else. Take that crevice tool, and to it, you want to attach something akin to a soda straw.
Okay.
Right? In other words, imagine a rubber tube is too flexible. It's going to be something that's fairly rigid but has the ability to bend. What we would use in the shop is a piece of steel tubing. I would use a piece of quarter-inch steel tubing, and I would shove it into the crevice tool, and then duct tape it up so that's airtight there. So all the vacuum now is concentrated at the very end of this quarter-inch steel tube.
Oh, and you'd stick that under the front seat.
And I'd sneak that under those vents and around. You could wind up, you know, pulling nose hairs out of somebody with that thing without their even knowing it. So I would try that.
Okay, good.
You know, but alternatively, you could go to a construction site, and they can actually hang the vehicle from the front bumper, you know, one of those cranes, and give it a good shake. But they're in there. Eventually, they will melt.
Oh, brother.
Brother is right.
Now, if this were a 96 Odyssey, would you be this concerned about it?
Of course not.
Tell the truth.
Well, the noise might make her crazy no matter what.
The noise is enough to make you crazy.
I had a similar problem once. I had a wonderful...
But it was a whole pizza that I lost.
No. This happened at the factory. One of the only new cars I ever bought, which was about 50 years ago, and there was a nut or bolt or something that somehow got stuck inside the rear wheel well. And every time I stepped on the brake, this thing would roll forward in the car. And every time I started from a dead stop, it would roll backwards. And I couldn't get at that thing no matter what. And then finally I had to just rip the car apart.
Oh.
Because it made me crazy.
Yeah, and he ripped it apart by hitting a guardrail. That's a creative solution. But you will find these jelly bellies.
Okay.
Good luck, Katie. But I would fashion that wand because I think something like that, that kind of tubing, you can use copper tubing as well, is very bendable, can turn around corners. And when you grab one of those things, you'll notice a difference in the pitch of the vacuum cleaner. And you'll say, I got one. And you'll pull it out.
And it'll be stuck to the front.
Perfect.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck, Katie.
See you, Kate.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, look, it's time for us to take a little break.
Yeah, we have to pause and give credit to our advertisers.
Actually, this is public radio. We don't have advertisers.
Oh.
We have companies that give money to the stations to help pay for the show, but we generally refer to them by a more respectful name.
What, like suckers?
No, underwriters.
Underwriters,
anyway,
right.
After we take care of some important business, we'll be back with a brand new puzzler. about words.
Words? I can hardly wait. Stay tuned for that and more of your calls. We'll be back in just a minute.
On the highway, dead animals laying lumps and chunks. I counted all the cats and dogs that Ricky took the skunks. If I had a nickel for everyone I've seen so far, next time we stop for gas, wouldn't have to siphon from a car or a truck. Feels like I might be running out of luck.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from our mechanics continuing ed classes. This week, selling unnecessary belt replacements from NPR, NPR member stations, and
TIAA CREF, helping those who serve others plan for and live in retirement. Online at TIAACREF.org. And
Allstate now offering accident forgiveness and a reminder that your odds of having an accident go up when you are tired.
So if listening to my brother is putting you to sleep, pull over.
Hey, more information at Allstate.com. Are you in good hands? And
Pabst Brewing, supporting live music and local artists nationwide and proud supporter of NPR Music Podcasts at PabstBlueRibbon.com.
And even though Silvia Poggioli wonders if she can go back to selling Pope snow globes outside the Vatican whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Mm.
And last week's Puzzler was rather lengthy, and I thought this one should be brief because there's nothing that makes a Puzzler more enticing and more alluring and more solvable than brevity. I mean, you know, so you don't want to really elaborate and make them too long, because if you do, you lose people's attention.
Could you just tell us what the Puzzler is?
Oh, sorry.
I mean, we're going to doze off here. Go ahead. I'm ready.
A friend of ours who runs for lack of a better term, I'd have to say a small business in our fair city. You know, well, he's a loan shark, actually. But came across this word some years ago and sent it to Tom, thinking it might be a good Puzzler. And Tom must have lost it, but this friend also sent it, I think, to Alan Feldman, who recently sent it to me. And here it is.
Ah.
Give me a word with three consecutive double letters. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'll give you a couple of words that are almost qualified, but don't. For example, the word committee, C-O-M-M-I-T-T-E-E. It would be great, except for the I that sneaks in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Or Mississippi, M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I.
Yeah.
If you could take out those I's, it would be Ms. B. And it would work. But there is a word that has three pairs of consecutive letters. Three consecutive pairs of letters.
Yeah.
Okay. And to the best of my knowledge, this may be the only word.
Really?
Yes.
You're going out on a limb and stating that there is only this one word?
This will goad our listeners into coming up with at least 500 more. Anyway, if you think you know the answer, write it on the bill of sale for an Ace Sports Explorer go-kart with a 250cc four-stroke electric start engine, 22-inch rear tires, live axle, disc brakes, bucket seats, and an in-dash cappuccino maker. And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city?
MA02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But if you have a question, call us now. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255, I think. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, my name is Dylan McDaniel, and I'm calling from Sheffield, Alabama.
Dylan?
Yeah.
Okay, Sheffield, Alabama.
Right.
What's going on, Dylan?
Well, I've got this beautiful American classic. It's a 91 SL1 Saturn.
Uh-huh, that's a classic, yeah.
And it's got kind of two problems. It likes to drive itself, and also when you turn the car on for the first time, well, when you turn it on ever, the RPMs shoot up to 3,500. Or 3,700.
Uh-huh.
And then back down, or it stays up
there? And then over a few minutes, it'll sit there and drop about 500 RPMs at a time until it gets down to maybe 1,200. And when you're done driving and you try to shift gears, when you try to go put it back in park, it does it again. It shoots up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Crazy.
And the check engine light is on, too, huh?
it goes on and off. I've tried to put the little wire in the block to get the check engine light to blink.
Yeah.
And it tells me something about, like, the oxygen's too rich.
It could be the oxygen sensor is bad. It's a 91.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, probably
classic
has only,
year.
We know that. So it has only one oxygen sensor, and it could be that the sensor is bad, but it could be other stuff, too. I mean, the coolant temp sensor could be bad, and that would explain the high revs, perhaps.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you said something about driving itself. Is that because of the high revs?
What does that mean?
Yeah, so, like, if you're at a stoplight and you're on a flat road, if you take your foot off the brake, it'll kind of slowly start to accelerate, and it'll get up to, like, 40 eventually.
Oh, yeah. Because it's an automatic transmission, and it's revving at 3,500 RPM.
Yeah, that's about the speed you'd need for 40.
Yeah.
And since it doesn't have cruise control, I mean, you know, it's like maybe
now.
That's a feature I want to keep.
Well, I mean, it's probably something in one of the sensors, and without the right equipment, you're not going to figure it out. You need to take it to somebody who has a scan tool and can figure out what's going on. It's probably something. It could be an O2 sensor.
Okay.
Although usually on a car this age, it's not running. It's not using the oxygen sensor input to affect the fuel injection until the engine reaches operating temperature. The newer cars from 96 on have heated oxygen sensors, so they're working almost immediately upon the startup of the engine. And they can make the thing run fast or slow or peculiarly if, in fact, there's something wrong with them. But yours isn't kicking in until the engine is warmed up. So I don't think it's the oxygen sensor. If it's revving high when the thing first starts, it could be a lot of things, but I don't think it's that. But you may need one of those, too.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're kind of reluctant, I sense, Dylan, to take it someplace.
Yeah. I kind of like working on it. I don't like paying other people to.
Yeah, but you're not going to figure this out.
Well, you might.
I doubt it.
Well, what else are you willing to try? So if you looked at the throttle to see if, in fact, there's anything sticking in there, that if you've taken, you know, to make sure that when you step on the gas pedal that the plate moves freely and the whole throttle body isn't all filled up with carbon and varnish and all that.
Well, that's something you can do if you haven't done it.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing to do.
Because that could easily be the problem.
Interesting.
And it would be an easy problem.
And the other thing you could do, you have the manual in this car?
Well, I just have one of those Chiltons.
Oh, that ain't going to help you. You need to get the actual specs, for example, for the coolant temp sensor. And it'll tell you at such and such a temperature, the resistance should be this much. And at this other temperature, should be this much. And it'll tell you if the thing is off. And if it is, that may be the cause of your high revving.
Okay.
You know, and I would suspect it's something like that. But between, you could just go ahead and replace the thing.
The car?
No. Well, you could, but that wouldn't be any fun. No, if you think it's how many miles are on this thing?
167.
Well,
that's a fair number.
If you had it since day one?
No.
No, you couldn't possibly have lasted that long. How many miles have you driven it for?
Oh, definitely over 100,000.
And you've never changed anything like the oxygen sensor?
I thought you were going to say the oil.
No.
No, I've never had to change. I've never changed the oxygen sensor.
Really? So
it could be the original one.
It probably is, and I certainly would start by changing that. Although I don't think that's necessarily the cause of the problem, but it could be any of the other sensors as well. But you have to start someplace.
Yeah. Right.
You know. So in the absence of the book. You know, you're going to have to just take wild guesses at things. But I would start with maybe the coolant temp sensor and then the oxygen sensor. And then I'd work my way back to, like, the rearview mirror. <You know? laughs> Good luck, man. You're going to need it.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Fallon. I'm calling from San Diego, California.
What's your name again?
Fallon?
Fallon. It's V as in Victor, A-L-E-N.
Have you ever met another Valen?
Nope. Once somebody told me they knew one, but she spelled it wrong, and we had a little bit of an argument.
Spelled it wrong.
Well, where did your parents get the name?
Well, I was supposed to be born on Valentine's Day.
Oh!
I was the first baby, and my parents' last name is Dutch. It's Van Lannen. So my father had this poetic, alliterative moment, and I'm Valen Van Lannen.
Valen.
And I have sisters Vanessa and Victoria.
Excellent.
So,
well, thanks for calling. And
yeah,
this has been very interesting for me.
So what's going on?
Well, I bought a 2004 BMW little wagon. It's a 325 IT, an IT.
Yeah.
And my only problem is a parking deal. When I back up, the mirrors automatically readjust
yes.
focus on the curb
and
of the car behind me.
They point down.
Right. And then, but I forget. And when I come back in the car, I don't notice that they readjust, and I find myself on the freeway almost being run into or having other people run into me.
Oh, so they don't straighten out again?
They don't go back just where I really need them. And my husband says that a good driver doesn't look over her left shoulder when she's merging on the freeway. And
well,
so,
let's forget about your husband for a minute.
He won't like that.
Yeah.
Oh, so every time you finished parking...
Mm-hmm.
And you're pulling out, you have to readjust the mirrors. Well, there's something wrong because...
Well, I never do, though. I never think of it. Yeah.
See, when you put it back into drive, those mirrors are supposed to come up back to where they were when you started.
But they don't exactly.
Well, they are
so
supposed to.
So then I should just take it to the dealer.
When you say they don't exactly, they do come back.
Uh-huh.
But not all the way.
Yeah, it's different every time.
Well, you got to take it back to the dealer.
Okay.
Yeah. Geez.
They got to fix
so
it
So what about
you.
The left looking over your shoulder? Just... Quickly,
oh, you can look over your shoulder.
Oh, good.
I mean, I always feel, even though I rely very heavily on my mirrors when I drive.
Oh, yeah.
I do always feel comfortable getting a non-reflected point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah, really.
Things never look quite the same when they're seen in a mirror, especially the mirror on the right side, which is curved and makes, you know, makes stuff look farther away than it is.
Right.
You know, and so I always like to look over my shoulder, right and left,
okay,
to make sure there's nothing lurking there. I mean, you never know, a T-Rex could be there.
That's true.
You know. Anyway, take
also,
it back.
You may be adjusting your mirrors. This has nothing to do with the mirrors when you're back up, but just the settings of the mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
You may be setting them the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
Which is... that you can see sort of the end of the car on the left side and the end of the car on the right side.
Right. I was going more for the middle because it is a little wagon.
Yeah. See, that's not the right way to adjust the mirrors.
Okay.
Go to our website and you'll find the right way.
Oh, okay.
Because we'll make sure that Doug Mayer puts it up.
Okay. Super.
No, there's a right way to do it, which is difficult to describe right here, although we have been known to do it and confuse more people. That's why it's on the site now. But if you do it the way it says on our site, you will, in fact, not have any blind spot.
Oh, good. Okay, I'll do that.
All right.
Okay, super. Thank you.
See you, Valen.
Bye-bye.
It's interesting that for decades, I mean thousands of years, we've been adjusting our mirrors incorrectly.
Well, you know, up until recently, and I say recently, I mean the first few cars I owned didn't even have a mirror
on the right side. Well, I don't have
any. Or on the left, for that matter.
But my MG has no mirrors.
I know, but you're so small, it's hard for anyone to even see you. 888-CAR-TALK, that's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Steven. I'm calling from Chapel Hill.
Hey, Steven, what's going on?
Well, I've got a bet with a friend of mine. We were having some drinks the other night, and...
That's how it always starts.
Well, she's got the next round, if I'm right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, the bet is...
Was any arm wrestling involved?
No.
Okay, just checking.
So the bet is, I heard somewhere, and I think it's actually viable, that if you purchase your gas at a cooler time during the day, like in the morning or the evening, that you're going to get more of your money's worth, considering the fact that gas is measured in volume, and that in the cooler temperatures, it's more dense.
Sure.
That's true.
Sure.
That's
so, in other words, if you took a container of gasoline and left it in the hot sun and it couldn't evaporate, and then you took another container of gasoline and had it in the shade where the temperature differential might be 50 degrees.
Right.
And then you siphoned off a gallon of that hot gasoline, there'd be fewer molecules, fewer hydrocarbons in there.
Right. And this would amount to about a tenth of a penny. In terms of how much you'd be gaining by buying your gas at the right time of day. So whoever won, big deal.
Well, we don't know exactly how much of a difference it makes.
Hey, all that matters is that I'm getting free drinks out of this.
So you think buying your gas in the morning is advantageous, right?
Right.
Yeah, because as opposed to the afternoon. Now, understand that the tanks are underground. And the tanks hold thousands of gallons of gasoline.
Right.
And when you put something in the ground like that, the temperature usually doesn't vary much from about 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
But what you're saying here is when the gas is cooler, it's more dense.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ashley, you owe me drinks.
Yeah, I would say so. How much
is it denser?
Is it? We can't tell you for sure, but it has to be denser.
And it may not be true at all about what actually goes from the tank underground through the thing that measures how much gasoline is going into your tank.
Right. It may not have enough time.
It may not have enough time to change.
But I think you're theoretically you're right, but I think practically, I think my brother's right in that it might not make much of a measurable difference.
Okay.
But so ideally, gasoline should not be measured in volume, but rather by weight.
Yeah.
That would be fair, right?
Yeah.
So you'd buy gasoline by the pound.
Yeah, I'll take 5 pounds of gasoline.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I don't know if it's cool or not, but good luck, Steve.
All right.
Get yourself
a
mojito, something real good.
See? Actually, that's her drink of choice.
There you go.
How did you guess that?
I don't know. Good luck, man.
All right, thanks.
High five.
Why do people sit around and even think about such stuff?
It must be us.
What?
Somehow our presence is encouraging these nutso questions.
No, no, they didn't think of us until after they came up with the question, and then they said, let's call them.
I don't think so. I don't know. I think we're responsible for more of these nutso questions than you could ever imagine. Anyway, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug, the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David Gibraltar Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug, the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Chevy Chase, Bouillabaisse, Lamb Chop Brace, Veal Milanese, Mayonnaise, Chocolate Lace, and Tarte d'Alsace, Stuff Your Face, Happy Place, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our staff orthopedist is Denise Hoyt. Our Ralph Cramden impersonator from the Dubai office is Muhammad Ahmad Ahmad Ahmad. Our physics graduate student is Laura Vernersha. Our undergarment inspector is IC London. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Eulewis Dewey, known to the PhD latte makers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 725, along with Car Talk clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, a slideshow featuring photos from our 20 years on NPR.
Most of them feature NPR executives crying inconsolably, but there are a few embarrassing shots of me and my brother.
That's the Car Talk 20th anniversary slideshow, all this week at cartalk.com. Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from NPR member stations and
the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And
K&N, maker of washable lifetime air filters, an ecological alternative to disposable air filters. More information at knfilters.com. And
Allstate, now offering accident forgiveness. And this reminder, not to drive like my brother.
Or like my brother.
More information at allstate.com. Are you in good hands? Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham and Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR grounds crew cuts mosquito-sized holes in our window screens whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.